May the words of my mouth, the meditations of all our hearts, be acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. A couple of weeks ago, the Episcopal Church was seen throughout the world as funeral services were held for President Gerald Ford. The dignified liturgy and the glorious music, the message of resurrection, and the hope for all of God's children. The liturgy spoke for itself, because it seemed that none of the news commentators wanted to mention the Episcopal Church. Unlike the couple of weeks before Christmas, when the Episcopal Church was given front and center stage with the news that some churches in Virginia were leaving the Episcopal Church. The truth to that is, and I want us all to be very clear about that truth, is that some people, not some churches, are leaving the Episcopal Church. It's people that leave the church. Churches do not leave. It's people that leave and join other churches or form other churches. In among all the talk of people leaving the Episcopal Church, there is another truth that does not get mentioned. And that is that the Episcopal Church is showing very positive signs of growing. That as well as people leaving the Episcopal Church, there are lots of people joining the Episcopal Church. What I want us to be clear about today is that throughout all of church history, people have left churches. People have joined other churches. And people have formed new churches. When somebody comes and joins a church, there is always great rejoicing. But what we fail to understand on the other side of that is that when somebody leaves a church, it's okay for people to leave. It's okay. Because the Episcopal Church, thank goodness, has never been a church that when you join, you are asked to sign your life away to the Episcopal Church. There is no lifetime commitment form that you sign. What's asked by you of the Episcopal Church is a commitment to a way of life. The way of Christ. The way of the gospel as we understand it. Now, when, for various reasons, that way of life, or that way of Christ, or that way of the gospel as we understand it, is not what people want, then it's okay for people to leave. It's okay for people to choose to leave. We're facing nothing new. In the whole history of Christianity, there have been people who've left denominations and started new denominations based on their interpretation of the gospel. And their differences in doctrines of religion. We sit here today as the Episcopal Church, organized after the War of Independence. When we as a nation were freed of British rule, and the church came no longer under the authority of the Church of England. We sit here today because of that. Church of England became the Church of England after about 300 years of a rise of nationalism that slowly kind of chipped away at the authority of the Pope. Under the reign of Henry VIII, the church in England became the Church of England, but it wasn't until Elizabeth I that the Church of England was excommunicated by the Church of Rome. Methodists got their beginning in the Church of England. When John and Charles Wesley, as Anglican priests, Church of England ministers, believed that the Church of England was not ministering well to those who were poor. And so they devised a method of study and a method of worship for those who weren't included in the Church of England. That's where they got their name, Methodists. Even in the Gospels, we read of an incident where people disagreed with Jesus. And they said, "We can't do this." And they left him. The same happened to his apostles, and it's happened in the church throughout the ages. So people leaving churches is nothing new. Now, what is unique about some of the people leaving the Episcopal Church is that they are forming congregations who are placing themselves under the authority of a foreign Anglican bishop. For the first time in Anglican history, we now have more than one church in a community with an Anglican identity. Here, even in Versailles, St. John's, under the authority of an American bishop, and St. Andrew's under the authority of the Bishop of Uganda. St. John's reflects the doctrine of the Episcopal Church. St. Andrew's reflects the doctrine of the Church of Uganda. We are here today in a historical time in the life of the Anglican Church, because for the first time in Anglican history, some Anglican provinces now disregard the boundaries, disregard the doctrines, and disregard the autonomy of other Anglican provinces. Now, you know there's a lot of fuss about this, because it's changed the nature of Anglicanism. Yet here in the United States, we need to be deeply thankful that we live in a country where there is freedom of worship. And if there is freedom of worship, then there must also be freedom where to worship, how to worship, and whose authority we place ourselves under. What is not right is when we criticize somebody else for doing something or not doing something that's different to us. Throughout the ages, people have had a different interpretation, a different focus on different parts of the gospel. And when people do not agree with that, it's okay to leave. This coming Thursday is the Feast of the Confession of St. Peter. Thursday after is the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul. Throughout Anglicanism and other mainline denominations, that week between the Feast of Peter and the Feast of Paul has been called the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. It's not a week where we are called to pray for one kind of mega church where we all affirm the same doctrines, because I do not believe that that will ever happen. What I believe we are called to in this week of prayer is to affirm our common beliefs and acknowledge in love that there are differences in doctrine. We are called not to be judges of other people, but fellow travelers on a spiritual journey for our time in God's world. The Apostle Paul, who never walked with Christ, understood this very clearly as he wrote to the church in Corinth. He said, "Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of service, but the same Lord. There are varieties of working, but it is the same God who inspires them all in everyone. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good." It is this spirit of the common good that the week of prayer for Christian unity calls us to. It's the calling to build the common good, not the call to destroy one another. Denominations of Christian faith have always been a part of the Christian tradition since Jesus called his 12 apostles. And look at those apostles. Did they agree on everything? On how the gospel was to be preached? Who would be included in God's kingdom? Who would be left out? Who would be welcomed? Who would not? Who was considered clean? Who was considered unclean? Did they agree? Absolutely not. Did Jesus commission all of them to preach the gospel? Absolutely. The Anglican Church as we know it will never ever be the same. We're now moving into a time when there will be numerous churches with a different Anglican identity in one community. Yet for all denominations, our prayers are asked for the building of the common good. The common good news is that Jesus, the Son of God, died to draw all people to himself. The common good news that the church, the whole church, has the message of salvation to all people. It has the incredible message of forgiveness to all people. And it has an incredible message of hope to all of God's world. We are called to show by example that there is a way of peace, that there is a power of love, and there is the possibility of a walk with each other that can unify and not tear apart. This is our call. It's the call to everyone who calls themselves Christian. In the week of prayer for Christian unity, may we all pray that we answer the call for the common good. Amen.